be having a special conversation tonight about something that is very near and dear to my heart, an agency called the Brain Injury Coalition and a collaboration with the Chico State Communications Program on some folks here that live in our community on and their stories. So stay tuned as we will be listening to their personal stories here on the air, and we're going to be listening to three amazing women that helped to make this project possible. We'll be here having a conversation with you, so feel free to give us a call if you feel inspired to ask a question. The number's 895-1114. That gets you directly on the air. We will be speaking with Erin, Shelley, and Landa quite soon. We'll get this hour started with a little bit of musical love. Love Is All You Need by the Beatles. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Grocery Outlet of Chico. Independent owner and operator Chris Hosteller brings locally grown and produced items as well. Find brand names in groceries, housewares, health and beauty products, including organic, and has fine wines and more. Chico Grocery Outlet is open from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8 a.m. till 9 p.m. on weekends at 2157 Pillsbury Road next to Kmart. Find them on Facebook and at groceryoutlet.com.
All you need is love, love. Love is all you need. 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 Love is all you need.
Love is certainly all you need, and from my perspective. So we are going to be talking about love and this amazing work that these three women have been up to. So we'll get started by introducing them all to you and what the project is that we are about to share with you here live on the air. Again, you're tuned into Love in the 21st Century, and I am Tamara. Thank you, ladies, so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah. And so I'm going to have you scoot as close as possible to the microphones because you want to, yeah, get them to pick you up. We'll start with you, Erin, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and sort of explaining your association to the project.
Sure. My name is Erin Haley, and I'm a board-certified music therapist here in Chico. And I actually am probably the last person that should talk because I was the last person to be involved in this project. But Shelley, who you will meet, heard a presentation that I did about music therapy and neurologic rehabilitation. So for rehab for people that have had strokes or traumatic brain injury or Parkinson's disease, and that I did this presentation at the for the Brain Injury Coalition. And Shelley happened to hear me and contacted me and said, "We're doing this amazing project. I think you need to be involved." And she told me about it. And I said, "I think I need to be involved too." And so it was kind of a last minute thing this year. And it ended up being amazing. What you'll hear and what you'll find out is that we have individuals that are going to be talking about topics that are very near and dear to their heart. And what I got to do is meet them and talk with them and find out what kind of music or music style or musical instrument or lyrics or artists that they really resonated with and what would match their topic. And that became the transition music going into what they were going to be speaking about. So it really was a labor of love. The music that we used and the music that they chose and how we adapted it was a really great collaboration between myself and the students and the community members to support what they were doing through this program. So
great. Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited. I've got more questions about more specifically what it is you do, but we'll move on and we'll get to that.
Sure.
So Miss Shelley.
Yes, my name is Shelley Vonberg, and I'm a clinical instructor and professor at California State University, Chico, in the Communication Sciences and Disorders program. And my involvement with the Brain Injury Coalition came about 4 or 5 years ago when I was invited by Landa at the Brain Injury Coalition to come and speak to their group about cognitive rehabilitation. In the area of speech pathology and audiology, one of the areas that we train our students in is metacognitive rehabilitation for individuals who've experienced brain injury, specifically traumatic brain injury. And my presentation was on, it really spanned a number of issues, but one of the issues was interviewing individuals to learn what their topic of interest might be, how a radio program might increase quality of life, creating one's own radio segment, biofeedback, errorless learning, and then to present it on a radio show like K Zephyr. We really, really appreciated that collaboration. There are many activities that individuals with brain injury can undertake with students to increase quality of life, but we felt that a radio show would be very, very strong because it is something that one generates, and it is from one's own interests and building a script with the students. And so we started this in 2015. This is our third year, and it's only gotten stronger and stronger. And as Erin mentioned, we brought her on board this year because music is so personal to individuals, and it really it just enhanced the scripts that the students and the individuals with the Brain Injury Coalition put together. And so all of these radio segments, as you'll hear, are anywhere between 5 to 7 minutes in length. They were all scaffolded over 4 and 5 segments. One individual with brain injury in the Thresholds group would meet with 3 graduate students from Chico State Communication Sciences and Disorders Program. These individuals would interview one another and fill out a biographical questionnaire. So that was very rich because the students got to meet the individual with the brain injury and vice versa. And then they decided on a topic, The topic was built over two sessions, and that is where the metacognitive training, the errorless learning come in, where the individual learns how to really listen to him or herself in real time and make adjustments in topic initiation, vocal quality, spoken output in real time. And we think it's been quite a success. So I'll hand it over to Landa, because without Landa and the Brain Injury Coalition, none of this would be possible.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, I'm Landa Bell Carson, and I'm the president of the Brain Injury Coalition. But I think that what the Brain Injury Coalition has always been about is to reach out into the community and provide opportunities for people who've had brain injury. So the opportunity for the folks that we have met or the people that we work with, it's just been such a great opportunity for them to be connected with students at Chico State. And the other thing that I think has been so important about this project is the education that the students actually get themselves. In terms of really meeting people and having the opportunity to work one-on-one in this environment. So it's just always been a very positive thing, something that many of the folks that we have worked with over the years have wanted to do over and over again. And I think the other thing about the Brain Injury Coalition is that education is so important in terms of bringing about awareness. So we think this is another opportunity to bring around awareness about brain injury.
Fantastic. So. Yes, thank you. So, Shelley, I do have a couple of questions for our listeners. So you basically explained in a nutshell what the project was. It was to bring together the Brain Injury Coalition, who serves community members who've experienced some type of brain injury, with Chico State students to put together a radio program. And there was a couple terms you used in there that I know that I'm not super familiar with, so I imagine that our listeners probably aren't either. Metacognition, what does that mean? And biofeedback.
Very good. So metacognition is our ability to be self-aware and to self-correct in real time. So very often, in order to apply metacognition, we need a scaffold. So what we do is create a visual template of biofeedback questions for individuals who are creating these programs. Some of these would be, for example, rapid rate of speaking. So listening back on an iPad was the best way of doing that. And individuals would rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. My rate of speaking was too slow, just right, or too fast. Vocal quality, same thing. Interjections such as or, which we know are all no-nos for the radio. And so we would count those. And then we would bring that into what we call errorless learning, in that we would listen back immediately, self-evaluate both the students and the individuals creating the radio program and actually speaking on the radio. And then in a very gentle but proactive fashion, the individual would alter his or her approach to that radio segment based on that gentle yet very positive feedback. So feedback is largely audio feedback because it is the radio. So individuals would listen to their segment, modify as the case might be, and then we would have others listen and rate on a scale of 1 to 10. So it really was a group effort, and people learn from each other's strengths, and that's what's so powerful about that. So again, biofeedback is the auditory feedback, listening back and making adjustments. Metacognition is being aware and in the moment and making those changes.
Fantastic. I was also curious, Landa, you brought up the students and their participation and how important it is for their own pursuit in their professional career. And so I'm curious if you, either of you, know what sort of direction that many of these students end up going once they've sort of this is where they're starting in the Chico State.
I'll go ahead and answer that. This is Shelley Vonberg again. These students, once they pass their second year of their master's degree program, go into something called a clinical fellowship year. That's a 9-month program after which they receive their certificate of clinical competence, which means that now they are certified speech language pathologists. Many of our clinicians are now moving into the adult arena. There are several avenues by which the speech pathologists can go after graduation. They can go into the schools, they can go into private practice, they can go into hospitals, rehab centers, skilled nursing facilities, or this is what's so amazing about communication sciences and disorders, they can go into all of those areas because they are qualified in all of those areas. So many of our students are now going out into rehab centers, skilled nursing facilities, hospitals, and private practice clinicians where they will be one-on-one with individuals with acquired traumatic brain injury. And this particular program that we've have really been so lucky to do with the Brain Injury Coalition has created a bridge between the graduate program and the outside world where these students are going to be working. It is a strong bridge, and it's a proactive bridge, whereas before they had no experience or opportunity such as this.
Mm-hmm. Would that then affect where they might decide to do their fellowship?
Indeed.
So they might think that they wanted to be with children, but then they work with these community members and they realize they have an affinity for this population, and maybe it changes the direction?
They do indeed, and I'm glad that you brought up children, because even though the students have been working with adults with traumatic brain injury, they also, there is a population of children with traumatic brain injury. Mm-hmm. And they can bring the same scaffolding in that they use with adults as children.
Mm-hmm. You know, Shelley, I think that what I've been so excited about with regards to the exposure with individuals with brain injury is that we have found over the years that many times we don't have the professionals in the community that have the expertise. And so exposing students, especially for the future, has been really valuable. And we've had this opportunity certainly with the Communication Disorder Clinic, but also even with the psychology department. It's amazing when we have interns what a difference it makes in terms of them understanding brain injury.
Fantastic. And then, Erin, I wanted to ask you a follow-up question about what you shared. So you mentioned musical therapy in regards to Parkinson's, brain injury, and strokes. Mm-hmm. And so can you elaborate a bit more about what musical therapy is exactly?
Absolutely.
And how that
probably
benefits?
Probably more than we have time for.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. Be mindful of that.
Yes. So one of the easiest ways that I describe music therapy is that I use music to help my clients achieve non-musical goals. So the things that we're working on could be social skills, emotion regulation, memory, engagement, that sort of thing. There's a whole lot we could talk about, but specifically with neurologic rehabilitation, there's a whole field of music therapy that is called neurologic music therapy, and it's research-based, scientific-based interventions that are most often based in rhythm, like rhythmic interventions that assist with rehabilitation for movement, rehabilitation for communication, and, I mean, a lot of other things, but in this case, emotion regulation can be a part of that. Also, social interactions, engagement, emotional expression can all be addressed using different music interventions. So, for example, if somebody is learning how, I actually have a client who had a stroke who is having some issues with speaking, with expressive communication. So I'm using a technique called melodic intonation therapy, and it's a very specific structured intervention where we have a metronome to set a certain pace. We have certain phrases or words that he's working on, and we have this process by which we go through these phrases using the like a melody, almost like a little sing-song melody, to say a word to a specific beat that matches his current rate of speech, and then we build on that, and that will address his expressive communication over a process of, well, it varies, but throughout his therapeutic sessions, that sort of thing.
Wow, fantastic.
So, yeah, there's a lot we can do. There's a lot more to talk about, but...
In a nutshell.
That's
okay,
it.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And Landa, I know that you mentioned, you know, being the president of the Brain Injury Coalition, but maybe we can elaborate a little bit about what else the Brain Injury Coalition does, because
right.
it's an amazing organization for this community.
The Brain Injury Coalition is a nonprofit and organization, and we are responsible for sharing resources, education opportunities for people who sustain brain injuries. We've been around for a long time. We get calls from really all over California, but mainly we're here to support individuals who've had brain injury and their families to be able to access services that are here and to create opportunities. So we're very involved in networking with all the other agencies in the community and making sure that people who've had brain injuries can either access their services or support them in whatever we can do to make sure they can get the kind of services they need.
Which is amazing, because it's one of the only agencies of your type in all of Northern California.
We're a volunteer organization. I'd say that's why we're unique in that way. Mm-hmm. But certainly there's Disability Action Center, and they have a traumatic brain injury program. And there's certainly the Department of Rehab. There's many agencies that serve this population.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of being a volunteer organization that is supported by donations in the community, we are one of the only ones.
Right.
Yes.
And I would say quite comprehensive in terms of the services that you do offer. It's very unique, and the fact that you're volunteer based.
Right.
Absolutely. Thank you for all the work that your agency does, you
Thank
included.
You.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So let's talk more about the project, Shelley. So we talked about it in the sense of, like, generally what it is. You, 2017, here we are. You've been doing the radio shorts for 2 years. And so where did this project begin this year? How long have you been working on it? And how many people are involved?
This is our third year that we are doing the radio shorts. It began with a sabbatical that I had in 2015. It has been so successful and so evidence-based that we actually presented it at our California Speech Language Pathology and Audiology Conference last year, which is refereed. It's very, very competitive. And what was wonderful was the students were able to attend as well and achieve some speaking experiences. So we would like to continue moving forward on this. We're actually thinking possibly next year about a cooking show.
Wow, nice.
So, because all of the segments that you'll hear, they're quite varied, but we do tend to always circle around to food.
Mm-hmm.
And sustenance is such a large part of our culture and brings individuals together. And it is very idiosyncratic to everyone as well. Everybody has a family recipe or some type of cultural experience. So that is something that we've been discussing in maybe having a fun radio cooking show.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have one other thing to say, is that due to the success of this program, our students, a number of them volunteered to work with a book club that Landa started at the Brain Injury Coalition. I believe it is called the Book Club,
mm-hmm.
whereby in a democratic fashion, books of interest are selected, and the students and the individuals from the Brain Injury Coalition read together, review what they've read. It's very flexible and amorphous. Normally, they'll talk about each chapter and their thoughts about each chapter. I do know that one of the books that they've completed is Thunder Dog. which was a great inspiring story that occurred during the 9/11 about a, I believe it was a seeing eye dog. So that has been a spinoff of the original Brain Injury Coalition radio shorts, and we're very, very excited about that because it's a continuation, and so we just don't stop the radio shorts and say we're done. Any good project is perpetuated, whether the founders are there or not, and that's what we're hoping for this collaboration.
Great. And it looks like we have six stories that we're going to be listening to.
That's correct. Over the years, it's ranged anywhere from 6 to 8 stories. And the stories originate from a bio questionnaire and topic questionnaire that the students put together. And they come, the entire group comes up with the topic of interest for that particular segment. The topics have ranged from how to build a garden to food and food co-ops in Chico, to recipes, to how to love oneself with a brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that is very much highlighted by the music that Aaron brought in this particular spring. We're very excited about that.
Great.
Well, thank you.
Aaron, was there anything that stood out for you and this being your first time and being involved with Radio Shorts that you want to share with us?
Oh, so much. Like I said, I kind of came in at the tail end, and there were four sessions, I think, Shelley, that the students met with the community members, and I was out of town for the first two. So I didn't even get to meet the participants until the third week of their collaborating with the students. And so I didn't really know exactly what was going to happen, because I knew we were going to do the transition music, and I knew what the topics, the titles of the topics were, but I didn't really know how we were going to get the music in there, how much time I would have, would we even have time to do anything, because, I mean, I was going to have 15 minutes per person, really, the first time I met them, so I was kind of flying blind a little bit. And the first room I walked into, I met Barbara, who you'll hear, and she started telling me more about her topic, and it was just like the lights just went on. It was just this inspired interaction, and we connected immediately with this idea about what to do for the music for her and how she could be involved in it, and we just kind of like did it right there. We just figured it out in the moment, and it was so cool. And it was such a great, auspicious beginning for the rest of it. So I was really grateful that that's how it fell out, because I didn't know what to expect, and then I just had this beautiful experience fall into my lap. And I felt more like, less that I was bringing something to the table and more that I was the conduit for what was happening, which is very cool. And then those same sorts of things, I do want to mention that two of the community members were very brave, because not only they're all brave and they're wonderful for doing this, but two of them in particular, not only did they work on their speeches and their segments, they agreed to sing.
Wow.
During their transition music. So, which I get all the time, people are like, I can't sing, or I'm afraid to sing, or other. And these young ladies both, you know, we talked about it, and they were a little bit unsure about it at the very beginning, but they just were awesome. They agreed to it. They picked the music. They practiced. They prepared, and they sang and were recorded, and then their voices are now in the transition music. So,
amazing.
Yeah, it was really, really cool and really awesome of them. So kudos to those girls, because that's extraordinarily brave of them to do that, and then have it broadcast on the radio.
Right.
It's just a really wonderful thing. So every single person that I met was wonderful to work with, worked with me, helped me, made my job easy. Like, it really was a gift for me to be able to do this. And I'm so appreciative that this all fell into place the way it did, and that I got to participate with it. And I look forward to doing it again, because it was just wonderful.
Fantastic.
I like to do a little bit more in depth next time with all of the participants. So
Wow.
Yeah. It's going to be amazing to listen to.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Miss Landa, this is the third year, right? The third year that it's been going on. Mm-hmm. And so maybe what would you like to share in what you've seen as it's evolved and this now in this current year?
I think that what I've always been so amazed by over the last 3 years is that there has really been involved more self-confidence in some of the people that I know that have participated. There's so much practical application. Some people were going on for a job interview, and having this experience made a difference. And the they feel really proud of themselves, and it's great to be able to talk about something that they are good at or that they have accomplished. So it's been a very positive experience from that standpoint.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to get started here soon playing them. If anybody that's out there that's listening that either has a brain injury or knows somebody and is just very curious about the Brain Injury Coalition, I want to send out that phone number. So that's, is it 342?
342-3118.
Great. And there's also a website.
Yes. And the website is www.braininjurycoalition.info.
Great. So, yeah, if you are experiencing a brain injury or if you know someone, definitely reach out and get in contact. You can also come and volunteer and just be inspired by the people you'll get to meet. It's an amazing organization. As Landa mentioned, it is all volunteer run, so your help is needed.
Thanks.
Yes. So, I'm going to start turning those on. Is there anything you ladies want to say right before it starts?
I would just like, again, to thank this opportunity to be on KZFR to disseminate all of this and to be on your wonderful show.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, and thank you, Grant, who I know did a lot of the editing here. He's a man of many trades here at KZFR, and he put this amazing compilation together, and Rick for his efforts in getting it on the KZFR airways. So thank you so much, ladies.
Towards the sun. Lord knows when the cold wind blows, it'll turn your head around. Well, there's hours of time on the telephone line to talk about things to come. Sweet dreams and flying machines in pieces on the ground. Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. Seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you, baby, one more time again.
My name is Josh Malone. Come walk with me back to an easier time in Chico.
Hi, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Jessica.
So we're here today with Josh, and we're going to talk about Chico then and now. Josh has lived in Chico now for 30 years. He has been an active member of the community and has volunteered at the Kirshner Wildlife Sanctuary and Butte Humane Society. He is also an avid cyclist and enjoys his daily jaunt through Bidwell Park. He's here today to tell us about some of the major changes that he has seen in this town. So Josh, tell us about the biggest changes you've seen in Chico through the years.
We used to have railroad tracks that ran through downtown and along Park Avenue. I can also remember when the mall was off East Avenue, where Trader Joe's is now.
Interesting. So what has become of those railroad tracks that used to run through downtown?
They were removed in 1989. It is very different to not have an occasional train running down the street with all the cars. With the growth of Chico, it would not be feasible to have a train running through downtown. Now that the tracks are gone, there's been an increase in the bike paths through town. I've recently discovered a bike path that runs from East Avenue to Eaton.
Well, that must have been a great discovery. So what are some places you enjoyed biking to?
I used to bike to Oy Vey Bagels on 2nd and Broadway. Oy Vey Bagels used to have lines on Saturday morning that went around the corner to Collier's. Today, this is where Beach Hut Deli is located.
What other restaurants did you used to enjoy in Chico?
LaSalle's used to be a nice restaurant. It has since closed down. We used to go have lunch downtown and then hang out in the downtown plaza. The plaza used to be a nice grassy park with a gazebo and trees. The reason the trees were removed was because they were found to be diseased. Therefore, the park was renovated in 2008 to what it is today.
Well, speaking of parks, have there been any changes that you have seen in Bidwell Park?
I can remember when they put a phone in at Diversion Dam in Upper Park. This was added as a safety feature to be used in case of emergency. There have also been added restrictions with the gates to enter Upper Park. Additionally, roundabouts were added to enter the park. Larger and wider bridges were also built across the creek to make the park more accessible for everyone.
Wow, there have been some big changes around this town. What other things did you enjoy doing in Chico?
I really enjoy the farmers markets. Thursday nights, you can have dinner four or five times, catch a band or two, and know your bike is safely parked in the bike valet. And Saturday mornings, I enjoy the bagels and hot chocolate from various market stands. When I can, I like to support the local farmers. It's always the best place to run into friends and their families.
Wow, Josh, it sounds like you really enjoy Chico.
Yeah, I traveled and lived other places for a short period of time, but I'm always happy to call Chico home.
One of the greatest gifts you can give in your life is your time.
Does volunteering make you feel good? For many, it provides a sense of purpose. Volunteering is also an awesome way to be involved in the community. We're here with our friend Julie, and we're here to talk about something that Julie enjoys doing in her spare time. She volunteers weekly at the Joe McGee Center in Chico, California.
Julie, what is the Joe McGee Center?
The Joe McGee Center is an adult daycare program which assists individuals with developmental disabilities.
What is its purpose?
Its purpose is to increase independence and provide them with social activities, stuff to do every day, Monday through Friday.
It sounds like an awesome place. Where is it located?
It is located at 2812 Haggard Lane near the fairgrounds in Chico, California.
When did the Joe McGee Center begin, Julie?
It began in 1970. It was named after Butte County's Director of Special Education.
Wow, it's been around for a long time. What takes place at the center? What are some activities that participants engage in?
Outings, social activities, and there is an art room where they do art stuff and knit, and they have a therapy room where that they do therapy and all sorts of things.
So who attends the center? How many participants are there?
Individuals with disabilities. There's approximately 66 individuals, give or take.
What do you do when you're volunteering, Julie?
What I do is I just assist them with their needs, talk to them because they love to talk. I take my nail kit and do their nails a lot. They get all happy and do their nails and just do any color they want. So that's it.
That sounds so fun. How do we get more information about this facility?
You can contact them by phone, and their number is 1-530-343-3406, and they are always in need of new volunteers.
Thank you so much for sharing about your experience at the Joe McGee Center, Julie. Remember, No act of kindness, no matter how small, is ever wasted.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
And welcome. Today we have Tom, Jose, Anna, Abby, and Jocelyn here to talk to you about how to prepare a classic Irish dish. First off, Tom, tell us about your experiences regarding Ireland.
Hello, I'm Tom. I have Irish heritage on both sides of my family. In 2002, I was lucky enough to visit Ireland with my dad. We landed in Dublin, and immediately I was inspired by the regional cuisine and the culture of the country. Relatives of my dad were there to greet us at the airport, and once we got to the inner city, I was struck by the warmth and welcoming nature of the Irish. My dad and I took a boat ride past the cliffs of Moher. We kissed the Blarney Stone, strolled the idyllic Galway Bay, and visited County Cork, where everything is green. And lastly, we visited the famous Guinness Brewery. Guinness has been brewed in Dublin since 1759. The bubbles sink rather than rise, which is unique for beer. The color is not black, but actually a ruby red. Guinness is used in one of the most delicious Irish dishes I've tried so far, the Irish stout chicken.
Hey, that's something I haven't tried before. How would you go about making the Irish stout chicken?
First, heat 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil in a large skillet over medium heat until hot. Then, add 1 medium chopped onion and 1 large minced garlic clove. Cook and stir for 3 minutes or until tender. Now, while that's heating, you'll want to peel and chop 5 carrots and 2 parsnips. Go ahead and put those chopped veggies to the side. Once your garlic is tender, get your chicken and throw it in the large skillet as the aroma of fresh garlic arises. This will be about 5 minutes per side over medium-high heat. Add the carrots, parsnips, a teaspoon of dried thyme leaves, and a dash of salt and pepper to taste.
This sounds like a whale of a time already, but when do we get to add the beer?
First, you should take a sip for yourself just to make sure the flavor is good. Pour in a splash of 3/4 cup of stout over chicken and vegetables. Bring to a boil over high heat. Reduce heat to low. Cover and simmer for 35 minutes. Add 1/2 pound of fresh button mushrooms and 3/4 cup of frozen peas to skillet. Cover and cook for 10 minutes. Uncover skillet, increase heat to medium. Cook 10 minutes or until sauce is slightly reduced and the chicken is cooked to perfection. Make sure you have a meat thermometer handy for this part.
My mouth is watering already. How many friends can I invite over with this recipe?
This recipe makes enough for 3 to 4 people, but if you invite more, just adjust the amounts and tell your buddies to bring more beer. I recommend you pair it with a stout and dine outside if the weather permits. Cheers! Or if you happen to be in Ireland, sláinte.
I see the whole world in your eyes. It's like I've known you all my life. You just feel so right. So I pour my heart into your hands. It's like you really understand. You love me the way I am. Again, and the colors are golden and bright again, and the sun paints the skies, and the wind sings our song. It's a better place since you came along. It's a better place since you came along.
Angela, and I'm here today with Nikki, and she's going to tell us a little bit about dachshunds and how they can make your life better. Now we're going to have her tell us a little bit about her dog, Riley.
Riley is a 15-year-old brown short-haired dachshund, and he has the sweetest eyes. I got Riley when I was 18 from family friends in Paradise, and I've loved him ever since.
How do you care for Riley?
When I get up in the morning, I feed him half a cup of Iams dog food and then half a cup at night. He has a big gated yard that he loves to play in when I'm not home. I take him for regular walks around my neighborhood, and I also take him for regular teeth cleanings.
So that's how you care for Riley. What should all dog owners think about when caring for their pet?
All dachshunds have a fairly high need for energy to support their fast metabolism. Their high energy can be supported with their higher levels of protein and fat in their diet. But no matter what type of dog you have, quality nutrition is essential for good health. So dog food should contain as few byproducts as possible and be high in vitamins, minerals, protein, carbohydrates, and fatty acids.
How does Riley care for you?
Living with a brain injury and having Riley as a companion has improved my overall quality of life. He makes me feel safe and loved, and I couldn't imagine life without him.
What do you like to do with Riley?
I take him for walks, but my favorite thing to do is cuddle with him. I've had two other doxies, but Riley is my favorite.
What is the best way to keep your dog safe?
I have a gated front and backyard that allows Riley to play. I have a collar with ID tags that have my name and phone number in case he runs away. Microchipping is a wonderful way to keep animals safe, and I plan to do it for my next pet.
What are some common health problems to be aware of with dachshunds?
Hip and back problems are common in doxies. Hip dysplasia is the most common disorder that can be caused by poor diet, weight problems, and extreme activities.
What are some signs and symptoms of hip dysplasia that dog owners should be on the lookout for?
My first doxy had to have back surgery, and some of the signs that they can display are hind leg weakness, difficulty getting up, or an unsteady or swaying walk.
How can you help prevent hip dysplasia and other health problems?
You can help prevent these problems by using dog rams, having a healthy, balanced diet for your dog, and keeping your doxy happy, fit, and trim.
Where can you adopt a dog?
The Butte Humane Society is a wonderful place to adopt a cat or dog. They also provide microchipping as part of the adoption package. If you're looking to adopt a pet, go to Butte Humane Society. I volunteered there, and I'm sure you will find one that's perfect for you. Right now, there are two doxy mixes waiting, 8-year-old Tennessee and 5-year-old Willie, along with 20 other dogs looking for homes.
How much does it cost to adopt a dog?
Prices vary from animal to animal, but through Butte Humane Society, adoptions include more than $500 worth of services. The services include vaccinations, spay and neutering, microchipping, and much more.
Thanks for listening. We hope you help an animal find their forever home.
Process is the joy. I feel like I'm really in the moment. There can be a lot of action around me, physical therapy, other things going on at the center, but I am wholly focused on the paint and the colors. It's an intuitive act. I've been blown away by how healing colors have been for me just in the last 6 months. Now I feel like I see color more intensely in my world.
Today we have a story about the healing power of colors. My name is Kevin Crittenden, and I'm joined today with Barb Foy. Can you talk a little bit about what colors mean to you?
Since my brain injury, I'm a much more visual person. I had forgotten how much I love color. I have colorful images in my dreams, vivid images. They all come with feelings, even the ugly ones.
And how did you discover ceramic tile painting?
The story starts in the hills of Paradise after the fire of 2008. I was visiting my friend Keith, who lost everything in the fire. Well, almost everything. There was a box of ceramic tiles that had survived. I had seen some ceramic tiles at the Pig Taylor Center, and I was struck by the art form.
And can you explain the process of how you paint a ceramic tile?
I go by my intuition. I don't have a set picture of what the tile will end up being or even what it will look like halfway through. I just continue to work with it, add color and move color until I am happy with the design. The pinks, purples, and blues are what I'm naturally drawn to, but I have 12 different colors that I can use. I have a tendency to choose colors that suit my mood. It is a very intuitive act in general. I have begun to see the intensity of colors within my world. Currently, I am really into abstract designs. It is influenced by how I am feeling at that time.
And what does it look like, the process of painting ceramic tiles? This is different from glazing, right?
Yes, this is strictly alcohol painting, not glazing. Tiles come in different beautiful colors and sizes. Keith donated a huge box of white tiles that are standard coaster size, 4x4, and also large ones that are 12x12. To begin, we clean them off and dry them well. Rubbing alcohol is applied to part of the tile with either a cotton ball or a Q-tip in the area that you will be painting. Alcohol paint is then applied to the area that has rubbing alcohol on it. To create the designs, you can use toothpicks, paint brushes, or cotton swabs. Really, anything within reach. Another way to move the colors around is to take a straw and blow through it. I allow it to dry for a few days in case I want to add anything else. Once I am happy with it, it is sprayed with 2 coats of sealant to protect it. A cork board is applied to the bottom and set to dry.
What do you do with the finished tiles?
This is something that I have developed a passion for, and I like to share with others. I've donated some tiles to the Pig Taylor Center and gifted many others. But the bigger picture is that I know many people across the world tap into the healing of colors. Because colors have been incredibly healing to me, I feel as if it can be for others as well.
Talk about accepting and loving yourself. We will discuss ways you can learn to love yourself by nourishing your mind, body, and soul. Haley, how have you come to love yourself?
I have learned to love all aspects of my life through doing activities I personally enjoy. I have found ways to nourish my mind, body, and soul. Because you can't love anyone else until you love yourself.
Haley, how have you learned to nourish your mind and soul?
I garden, I love listening to music, and I have a great relationship with God and my family.
How have you practiced nourishing your body?
Yoga, eating healthy, and I attend a BO class at Chico State.
Haley, you mentioned you loved gardening. How does that help you to feel happy every day?
Gardening makes me feel happy because when I see my garden grow, I see my dedication pay off.
What are some of the plants you're growing?
I grow all kinds of different veggies and herbs.
Haley, you said you practice eating healthy?
I love to take care of my body by eating healthy. It helps me feel happy.
What music do you listen to and why?
One of my favorite songs that really helped me to learn to love myself is a song by Ava Moon called Love Yourself. Ava is a local Chico artist, and her song really spoke to me and what I believe in.
How do you practice a healthy body?
I do yoga and then go to a class called Be Well at Chico State. The Be Well class helps to support adults with disabilities wherever needed. It allows everyone to take full responsibility for their well-being in a very supportive environment.
You mentioned earlier that you have a good relationship with God. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I have a great relationship with God. Everyone needs to focus and build their own relationship with God, whatever that is. I know that God loves me for who I am and accepts me, and I love God.
Haley, how can everyone learn to love themselves even during difficult times?
Well, when you are going through a difficult time, you can find activities that allow you to live with purpose. You need to remember to take care of yourself and know that you are worth it. It is important to remember you are strong and God supports and loves you.
So Haley, what would be the last few takeaway points for people to hear from this?
I want everyone to know that you are a beautiful person and you are here for a reason. What a beautiful thing it would be for everyone just to love. Special thanks to
the Hey guys, Will Durst here with a few choice words about President Trump firing.
Thank you for tuning in to Love in the 21st Century. We just listened to the radio short, a compilation with the Brain Injury Coalition and the California State University Communication Disorder Program. It's an amazing program here in Chico, the Brain Injury Coalition. If you have a brain injury or if you know anyone that has a brain injury or if you're interested in volunteering, give them a call. Their phone number is 342-3118 and they're open from noon to 4 o'clock. You can also find them online at www.braininjurycoalition.info. Again, their phone number is 342-3118. They are one of the only agencies that are as comprehensive as they are, that are volunteer-based, and they're here in the North State, here in Chico, California. How fortunate are we? Reach out to them and find out more about what they're doing. Stay tuned for Ecotopia. It's coming up next. Stephen and Susan Chudy discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. Ecotopia, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet. And here is some Will Durst.
FBI Director James Comey with all the suddenness of a bowling ball hitting a sidewalk after a 10-story drop. Various reasons were given for the enforced departure. Comey had lost the confidence of the FBI rank and file. He didn't do a good job. He has weird hair. He passes gas in elevators and pretends it's the old lady who did it. Atrocities were committed during the Hillary Clinton email investigation, which, coming from Trump, makes the same kind of sense as New England Patriot wide receivers complaining that Tom Brady throws his passes too accurately. At first, several White House spokespeople, including Vice President Mike Pence, blamed Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein for initiating the firing. But then the president himself told NBC anchor Lester Holt that no, he was the one responsible, which sort of threw his own staffers so deep under the bus they got axle grease all over their lying little lips. Trump said one reason he fired Comey is because the guy was a big-time showboater and grandstander. Trump said that about somebody else. You can't make stuff up like this. The irony of this statement coming from President Braggadocio should be taken not just with a grain of salt, but an entire 15-pound Himalayan hanging salt lick. Trump said the director told him 3 times that he wasn't under investigation, which could be construed as obstructing justice and so illegal that chuckles were heard leaking out of Richard Nixon's grave, not to mention Hillary Clinton's bunker. Having the guy being investigated, firing the guy investigating him over Russian meddling makes the 45th president seem almost as desperate as Raskolnikov, the guilty and paranoid protagonist in the book Crime and Punishment. And don't forget, he was Russian too. Coincidence? I think not. For KZFR.